Excellent.
So I'm just going to go over some kind of housekeeping rules before we get started, Michael, just so that everybody kind of knows what we're up to and what we're going to do. So as I have said to a couple of you, because some of you have been here for a while, I've got you all muted at the moment, and that just helps for background noise. Obviously, there's a lot of us on the calls. So wherever possible, keep yourselves muted. And then when Michael opens up the call for questions or bringing people on, if you go down to your participants box, should be at the bottom of your screen, there'll be an option there to raise a little digital hand. It means you'll show up on my screen, and then I'll be able to unmute you and bring you on. So with that all said and done, I'm going to hand you over to Michael. It's all yours.
Very cool. There's three of me.
Yes. Uh-huh. We're coming. We're here to support you.
Two of me are pretty. That's it.
Oh, thank you.
So welcome, everybody. I've been looking forward to this for a while, and hopefully you have too, those of you who didn't just find out about it yesterday or today. And part of it is just the model that I share in the obstacle course was at the heart of my coaching for so many years that it was really fun to go back to it. And it was really fun to see where I still found it useful and to kind of update it. And so what I wanted to do, so today I'm going to ramble a little bit longer than I intend to ramble over the next 4 days. But there'll still be plenty of time, hopefully, for questions and coaching and whatever you would like for you. But I wanted to set some context for just how I think about this. And in order to do that, I'm going to sort of take you back in time a little bit to the coaching that I used to do before I came across the principles that I talk about in the program. But what I was seeing that I didn't have a good explanation for and what was behind. So my first book, some of you know bits of this story, was called You Can Have What You Want. But it wasn't really. It was originally called Soul Path, because I was trying to put together a book that described something I saw in my more successful clients, in my what I called my happily successful clients. So you can do a lot through stubbornness, right? Don't let anyone tell you you can't. Right? You can get to a certain level in life, just you know, as two of my dear friends who've been married almost as long as me and I say, yeah, we've just stayed together out of spite. Now, I'm not recommending it, but you can get pretty far on it. But there were people that I worked with who didn't do it that way, who really seemed to live almost charmed lives, in that things just worked out for them way better than you'd expect them to work out, and way more consistently than you'd expect them to work out. And the description I came up with for that was they were following their soul path. Now, I don't really know if that's what they were doing, but that's what it looked like. That literally things would be work out so well that it was almost like the next step would be placed in front of them as their foot was coming down. And they would describe it as, oh my gosh, that's even better than I could have come up with. And things that just made it seem like something in them was guiding them. And I noticed that that was in stark contrast to the way that a lot of other people I worked with who were successful, but kind of miserably successful, did it. And it was completely different to the people who weren't really getting anywhere in their lives were going about it. And so what I noticed was two things. The first was that the people who were stubbornly successful, as opposed to happily successful, had learned not to pay too much attention to their thinking. They learned to ignore the voice of doubt inside them, to block it out, to find some way that when everything in them was going, you're not going to do this, to go, fuck you, inner voice, yes, I am, and carry on anyways. The ones who weren't getting anywhere in their lives weren't doing that. They were listening to that voice as if it had a point and going, oh, I can't have this? Oh, okay. And then literally weren't doing pretty much anything to make it happen. And so, of course, were proved correct again and again and again. And so the way the change of the book title came about is I was meeting with Reed Tracy, who's the head of Hay House, And I was describing the book to him. He asked me to describe the book to him over lunch and what it was really about. And I talked about this soul path thing. But then I said, well, look, let me give you a couple examples, because I had done two coaching sessions the morning of my meeting with Reed. And the first coaching session was with a guy in England, and he had told me that his big dream, his big goal, success for him, was he wanted to move to Spain and open a nightclub. He'd done sort of some semi-similar things in London, but he wanted to move to Spain and open a nightclub. But it was impossible because, right, he had his list of reasons why that couldn't happen. And I worked with him, and I just basically said, look, have you costed it all up? Have you mapped it all out? And he said, well, no, there's no point in doing that until this happens and this happens, and I sort this out. And I said, okay. Well, that's your homework. Your homework is to do the math. Like, lay it all out as if you were going to go ahead with it, and then we'll talk. And so I had done that the previous session, the morning of my meeting with Reed. He came on, and he was kind of sheepish, and he said, well, I did the math, and actually, I could have a nightclub in Spain within 1 month. I said, oh, my God, that's great. And he said, no, it isn't. And I said, why not? And he said, well, I don't really want to do that. I just kind of hating my life, and that sounded like a nice escape fantasy. Now, that was interesting to me. Because once he knew that he could have what he wanted, he realized he didn't want it. But until he knew that he could have it, it was this unattainable fantasy. Now, literally, and this was just one of those gifts of fate, my own soul path. Right, the perfect calls happening the morning of my meeting with the publisher. So the next client I had, our earlier session, she had been telling me she wanted to divorce her husband of 20 plus, maybe even 30 plus years. And again, I was asking her, well, what's your big dream? What would you love? I get all the stuff you want to get rid of, but what would you love? And she said, well, I mean, I'd love to live by the sea, but I mean, it's never going to happen because my husband, you know, and she kind of kept telling me about the lack of sex they'd had for the last 20 years. And again, simply because I knew that that had nothing to do with whether or not she lived by the sea, I said, well, look, for your homework, why don't you go spend the weekend in a town where you think you might want to live one day, if you ever get rid of this, you know, lump of a husband of yours, and just look at houses. You know, no intent. You don't have to do anything about it. Well, I get back on the phone with her that morning, and she was glowing quite, you know, and she was like, you know, first thing, we had sex. But it was interesting. I said, well, what happened? Because that wasn't on the menu. That wasn't on her dream list. That wasn't in my advice as a coach. Like that seemed out of left field. And she said, well, I was dreading telling my husband that I was going to do your homework and that I was going to go to the seaside town. But I just thought, damn it, I'm going to do it. And she plucked up the courage and she went to him and she said, I don't remember where it was. I'm going to say Brighton. I don't think it was Brighton. I'm going to Brighton. And he said, can I come? I said, really? You want to? He said, yeah, I think it might be nice to get away for the weekend. I said, all right. So they went to Brighton. They had an amazing time in Brighton. They had sex in Brighton. They looked at houses in Brighton. And they decided that they were moving to Brighton, which about 6 months later they did. Now, in a funny way, it was the exact thing, same thing that happened in the first session. In the first session, when that client realized that he could have what he wanted, he realized he didn't really want it. In the second case, when my client realized that she could have what she wanted, she realized she really did want it. And so she was able to make it happen with relative ease. And so a lot of what happens when I coach people around creating the impossible, creating their dreams, creating the life they want, creating success, is
can you check your mic? You've just got awfully noisy all of a sudden.
How's that?
That's so much better. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Has it been bad this whole time?
You went in and I messaged you, but never mind. But it just got really bad there. You're back now. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. Shall I blame my feet, my swollen feet? Would that help? Would anyone buy that? No? Okay. and yet, that's the kind of excuse you're going to give me for why you can't have what you want. Just saying. We'll check in later. See, it's all for the service of you guys. I remember going to see a street performer in New York City once, and he was dressed like a fireman. I don't know. He said he was an ex-fireman, and he did fire breathing and fire juggling, and he actually got very badly hurt. Like, he burned himself during the act. And he's looking around, and it's like, you know, he had a big crowd, and he said, "For your fucking amusement, ladies and gentlemen, for your fucking amusement." But he got tipped very well. So anyways, my point, and I did have one, part of it was to establish, I'm probably going to swear a little bit over the next 5 days. So we're just now, we know that. So moving forward, what I've seen again and again, and even more so in the last 10 years, is that the number one reason that people don't succeed at what they say they want to succeed at is they talk themselves out of it. They talk themselves out of starting. They talk themselves out of throwing themselves in and committing. They talk themselves out of keeping going after the first thing that goes wrong, or the second thing goes wrong, or the fourth thing that goes wrong. And they take, they use sort of the invariably disparate things that can happen and will happen in a life as reasons that they can't have what they want. So they take themselves out of the game. Those of you that read the tip this week, the little excerpt, the rewritten excerpt from my book, Supercoach, that was what it was about. I tell the story in there of when I was a kid playing American football for the first time. And American football was my favorite thing to watch on TV. It was my favorite thing to play when we used to play on the playgrounds, and it was flag football or touch football. I got into pads and helmets, and people started hitting me, and I realized it's not the same when kids who are bigger than you are hitting you. It was nowhere near as much fun as it looked on television. And so, first big scrimmage, they throw the ball towards me. I'm wide receiver. Guy intercepts it. I'm running after him, and I'm making ground. I could have caught him, but I was tired, and I was just burnt out on adrenaline, and this kid sort of dove in front of me to try and stop me. Now, literally, I even knew it was time slowed down. I was 12, and I knew I could have stepped over him. But in that moment, I took myself out of the game. I just chose to trip over him. And I got away with it. I got a good hustle, attaboy from the coach, but I knew. Right? Well, we do that all the time. Now, I don't blame 12-year-old me, right? I was scared. I was just exhausted. I was freaked out. Might not have been a bad move, you know, got me out of football for a little while. But by the same token, had I really wanted to catch that kid, I would have. Or at least I would have gone down trying. And it's the same with the things we want to create in our world. If you really want to create something, you probably can. Now, maybe not, right? We don't control the universe. Some things aren't in the cards. But our ability to predict what's in the cards and what isn't is awful. We're like terrible at it. It's our worst skill. It's like our anti-superpower. And yet it's the superpower we try and rely on all the time. Oh, that's not going to work out. Good point. All right, I won't try. Or, well, this probably won't work out, so I'll kind of half-ass it. And if it works out, then hooray. But if it doesn't, at least I only half-assed it. And the thing is, what I've seen over the years is that most people are pretty much where you'd expect them to be based on what they've actually done to create what they want. Like, I'd love it to be all magical, and there's definitely magical elements to it. There's coincidence, there's what we might call luck or synchronicity or serendipity that starts to happen when you're really all in a game. All sorts of things occur. But most of us never get that far, right? But we say, I tried. Now, I want to add one thing to this. You don't have to. right? There is nothing from my point of view. There is nothing you have to do in your life that you have to create that, I don't believe you owe it to your dreams. But if you want to, you probably can. And so that's the framework that we're going to start with over these 5 days, right? That's the framework behind the obstacle course, is a knowledge that you probably can have what you want. And the question is, A, do you really want it? And B, how easy are you going to make it to talk yourself out of getting it? Now, what makes a tremendous difference in this is two things, again. One, recognizing the amazing resource we all have inside us, that we are made of the intelligence of the universe. That's kind of good to know. It's kind of good to know that the entire universe is in you. It not only has your back, it's what your back is made of. And I gave a talk once and somebody said, well, it sounds like you're telling us we should just fly by the seat of our pants. And I said, well, yeah, but the difference is I'm also telling you that the seat of your pants has wings. We're made that way. And not knowing that makes things seem a lot more daunting because we think we have to do it all through stubbornness and hard work. I'm not saying no stubbornness, no hard work will come into it. I'm saying that is not the primary driver. The second thing that gets in our way, the second way we get in our own way, the reason we take ourselves out of the game so easily is we live in a world of thought, but it really looks like we live in a real world where things are the way we think they are. And the more we see about the nature of thought, how it's transient, how the world will look one way in 1 minute and another way in another minute, how 1 minute it will look like the hill is this steep, and then in the next minute, we'll see that it's barely a hill at all. Anyone, I'm going to ask, show of hands doesn't work great on audio, but since we've got video right now, anybody ever watch the Boston Marathon? Okay, a couple people. So I grew up listening to the Boston Marathon on the radio, watching the Boston Marathon, but I'd listened to it for a number of years before I ever watched it. And there's a spot on the Boston Marathon. I don't remember, I don't know, Bob, if you remember, if it's 18 miles, 22 miles in, called Heartbreak Hill. And Heartbreak Hill was where even the best marathoners would sometimes give up. They'd lose it. They'd just lose heart. They'd lose the lead. And I always assumed that Heartbreak Hill must be this San Francisco style mountain. And I remember going to Boston one day and seeing Heartbreak Hill, and it's barely uphill. But in their minds at that point in the race, it felt like a mountain. Well, that's going to happen to us as we go about creating what we want in our lives. There are going to be times where thought makes a flat road look like a mountain. But the beauty of it is that if we understand that's what thought does, we don't have to fall for it. And we can keep walking. And then thought all by itself will change, and suddenly that mountain looks like a flat hill again. And as we get more of this inner resource on board, as we wake up more and more to the electricity inside us, the intelligence inside us, the life inside us, the deeper mind inside us, well, then even the steep hill's not that steep if you got a big enough engine driving. So we have a lot more going for us than we think. We have a lot more thinking than we think. And even though it's sort of the best trick in the world, what thought does to us makes it seem like what we think is happening is real, is really what's happening. It's the only trick. And because it's the only trick, we can start to catch wise to it sooner and sooner in the process. We can start to see it for ourselves. We can start to watch ourselves talking ourselves out of our goals and dreams, or trying to talk ourselves into something that we don't really want in the first place. We can look at a reality that looks so hard and difficult and real to us And then notice that that same reality doesn't look that way to us the next day or even the next hour. And the more we see that, the easier it gets. The more we see that, the more willing we are to take on bigger challenges. The more willing we are to want what we actually want, not what we think we can get. See, the reason for me to talk to people about dreaming big isn't because big is better. It's because most people already would dream big if they thought it was worth it. Most people, what they really want is much bigger than what they're going for. Because they're trying to be reasonable, right? You were brought up to be reasonable, weren't you? You were brought up that it was good to be reasonable and it was silly to, you know, want things that were beyond your station or beyond your ken or beyond your, you know, people like you don't do that. You want what you want, whether or not you think you can have it. And there is something unleashed in us, this inner mind, this inner resource, in pursuit of what we actually want, that is so far beyond our normal capacity, our stubborn capacity, our willpower to make things happen, that it's quite amazing what people can achieve and create when they let themselves. So that's your starter for 10. That's there to kick us off today and really for the 5 days. Over the 5 days, I'm going to get to as many of you as I can, which may be a bunch or not. We'll find out together. And let's start with the premise that anything is worth us talking about. And if you come up with something and I kind of go, oh, well, I meant everything but that, I'll let you know. But don't talk yourself out of it. Let me talk you out of it if it comes to that. I doubt it will. But hey, I like to be surprised too. So again, if you go to your participants button, bottom of the screen, you can raise your hand and Lynn will bring you on and we will chat and lives will change and magic will happen. That's what happens, right? That's our job?
Yep, partly so.
Excellent.
Yay, whole week of it. Okay, let's first go to Terry. Go ahead, Terry. You are unmuted. Over to you.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
What if you're in a place where you're not, you don't know what it is you want. You just know the feeling that you would like to have, a sense of deep peace in the moment. But there's really nothing that you're trying to go for in particular. There's not like this dream, this other than the fact that maybe you could live in your life and just be present in the moment. And that's it.
Do you want the good news or shall I make up some bad news to go with it?
I'm going to let your inner wisdom guide you in whatever you want to say to me.
Thanks, man. Gosh, I wasn't going to allow my inner wisdom up, but now that I've got permission.
Okay.
Here's the thing that I've seen, right? That peace that you want is you. That is you. That is your nature. That is what you are made of. It's already there. It's what's there underneath all the thinking, underneath all the noise, underneath all the striving. Me too. It's why it can kind of come up unbidden sometimes when you've just exhausted your own thinking or you've forgotten to think about stuff too much. And it's also why it's so hard to see, because it's already here. So it's a little different, a lot different, 180 degrees different to creating in the world. Because creating in the world usually does take doing stuff. Right? It usually does take time. It usually does take learning and skill development. It's almost like if you came on a course in waking up, like literally waking up from sleep. Now, it'd be really interesting to watch what the teacher did to try and get you to do that. Because it's a natural process, right? It happens every night. At least once, for some people quite often, right? And yet, it feels like a skill. it feels like something that maybe I could get better at if I practiced. And yet it's the exact opposite. It's a natural thing that we can only inhibit by trying to make it happen. So it just starts happening more and more when we think about it, worry about it, stress about it less and less. So what I'd encourage you over, you know, these 5 days at least, but also maybe for the rest of your life, is just to see if you know that to be true. Like, don't take my word for it. Don't take the guru's word for it. Don't take Eckhart Tolle's word for it. Like, you'll know the extent to which that's true for you. And if you follow that, that will then guide you. If there is anything to do, it'll come from that. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Being raised in this country or whatever, to having goals and such, letting go of any particular goal because you want to see what comes next. I mean, I know having goals is not a bad thing or a good thing. It's just having goals, right? Freedom is just the ultimate now experience that, it's like waking up. I'm already in it. It's, you know, asking yourself, what is it that you really, truly want in life? There's nothing that I'm seeing at this time that has anything to do with anything than other than sitting here talking with you on this call. And then whatever happens next, and that my foot will travel over there and I'll go out the door. So being at peace with that and trusting that it will present itself as you move along, I guess that's it.
There's something for me as you're talking, it's almost like the difference between a direction I aim myself in and a goal, a thing that I would like to do or have. So I have in my own life, the creativity professor Michael Ray from Stanford talks about it as the highest goal. But I orient myself towards awakening. I orient myself towards a deeper peace. I orient myself towards becoming more in tune with whatever this inner intelligence is. But it's not a goal in the sense of I'm not going to do anything deliberately about it, because it's not that kind of thing. If you asked me, what two things would you like most? Okay, I'm going to ask you to ask me what three things you would like most, because the third one would be most of what I already have. Right? If you ask me what I want, most of it I already have. It's my life. Right? But if you ask me, what two things do you not have that you want or you'd want more of? I in this moment, my honest answer would be a deeper connection to God and tickets for the Patriots Raiders game on November 19th with my son. Right? Now, those two things are not in conflict. Those two things are not, I'm not going to go about them the same way. Right? But if you just ask me what I want, that's it. Deeper relationship with God and, you know, Oliver to come join me for the Raiders game against the Patriots on the 19th. That's it. You know, so we live in a world where there is stuff we may want to do or be or have, but who we are, so forget the be part, do or have, but who we are is who we are. And fortunately, getting to know ourselves at that level beyond our psychology, that's, as far as I've found, the best game in town. And it doesn't preclude any of the other games.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cool. Thank you, Terry. Okay, next up, let's go to Deborah. Go ahead, Deborah.
Hello.
Hello.
um,
Great. Okay. I was thinking, oh no, it will be several weeks before I get to speak. So it's all low back. My version of reasonable is sensible. And right. I feel like I'm dealing with a backlog the whole time. Things that I want, but I've kind of got a bit impatient with. So one of the things is I'm decorating my flat and it takes time and I'm working on it and it's been going on several years. And I have the thought that I can't really do another big project because I've got this one going on. So whilst I might have ideas for other things that I want to do, and I've got the same going on with work, I've been studying this thing for a time and now I'm going out doing it, but it's going to be a while before that's really getting to the point where I'm happy with it. And it's so I've got these kind of ongoing processes that feel like I'm always catching up rather than dealing with the inspiration that I've got that day.
Okay. So ground that for me a little bit, because, and this sounds much more dismissive than I intended to be, but literally what I just kind of heard you say is, yeah, I want to decorate my flat and I'm not doing other stuff that maybe I could be doing, which probably is true, but there's nothing there really for us to play with. So, you know, what would be really helpful? What would you like to come out of our conversation?
I feel like I'm, it may be in a story that things have to be linear, that I have to do this thing and then tick it off and then I can go to the next thing. And maybe I just need to be more patient with that process and detached from the thinking that that's a problem. Or more, maybe there's another possibility of something happening that will, maybe address that in a different way.
So is there something that you would like to do or have or create that you're not doing or having or creating?
So I had an idea about doing retreats and then I had the talking myself out of it but I need to get my current setup established first. And then I'll be able to look at that.
All right. I'm going to try tilting my camera. And so if I lose my mic again, okay, let's see if we can get my desk. All right. So are you telling me I need to cancel my retreats? Because that would really mess us up as a business right now.
That would be my worst nightmare. I'd be decluttering for years.
Why do you think I'm going to Dubai so I can get away from this? Can you see how outside of thought there is no possible connection between those two things?
Yes.
Good. So here, that's fine. That's fine. And I'd love you to pop back on in a day or two and share what new thoughts come to mind.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Deborah.
Michael, just check your mic again in case you just, you sounded weird there for a second, but maybe not. Okay, let's go to Ivan next. Ivan, are you there?
Hello, hi.
Hello.
I didn't expect to pick me up. First I wanted to share something. Mm-hmm. By learning the principles, I noticed, I heard about them like a year and a half ago. And I noticed like 1 month ago that I stopped doing almost anything in my life. And I realized that I don't want this. I want to do more. And I was listening to some of the books of Steve Chandler and I was listening to the Obstacle Course. And actually I realized that I don't need to feel anything to do anything. I can do whatever I decide to do. But right now, the thing I think that would be really helpful for me is that, you know, when I go to talk about this, about the three principles or do some coaching or stuff like that, mm-hmm. I get my tongue is tied and I it feels like most of the time it feels like it's like the my I don't know if I'm shy or something like that. My tongue is tied and my it feels like I have no creative process going on in my head. And it is most of the time. I've noticed that when I'm feeling calm and I'm feeling in my when I'm feeling myself, I am I'm really creative, and I sometimes amaze myself. But most of the time, I feel like I lose it. And I guess the thing that would be most helpful for me is to open it up more for me. So I guess I'm missing something there. I mean,
Let me share two things with you, Ivan, that come to mind that may sound contradictory, but to me, they're just two different paths to the same place. So have you ever heard of, what country do you live in now?
Bulgaria.
Okay, so there's no particular reason you would have heard of him. There's a sports announcer here, a basketball announcer named Bill Walton. And he used to be a great player in the 70s. And he's become one of the top sportscasters. You know, he announces basketball games. And he's kind of famous for never shutting up. Like he's always got something to say. And Bill Walton, as a player and as a young man, had a terrible stutter. And because of that, never said anything. Like he was, people thought that he was the strong, silent type, but he was just embarrassed. And he decided he really wanted to become a sportscaster. So he worked on it. So every day he practiced speaking until he got so good at speaking that he never shut up. Now, the reason that I tell you that story in the context of what you're saying is it may be that you get tongue-tied when you first stand up in front of a group. And if you keep standing up in front of groups, that will lessen. And if you keep standing up in front of groups, you'll probably get to a point where you find it quite effortless. That's one side. But then let me pick up on the other thing that you said, which is sometimes you surprise yourself. The great thing about recognizing the existence of a larger intelligence, about seeing the capacity of this deeper mind, this universal mind, is that any moment we can get our personal mind out of the way, our personal thinking out of the way, our egos out of the way, I can get Michael out of the way, you can get Ivan with his tongue-tiedness, and I can get Michael with his embarrassment and fear out of the way, and let this deeper mind speak. We surprise ourselves. Great things happen. Not every time, but more and more of the time. So on the one hand, Ivan can get better at speaking because people can. On the other hand, you're going to do your best work when Ivan's not really even there. So what do you hear in that?
Well, first of all, the thing I feel like I got a really good breakthrough in the last month was that I realized that I want to practice a lot of things. I want to get better at a lot of things. And if I want to, I can do it. Mm. I really feel like I can do it. I feel like there is nothing stopping me. I can feel bad. I can feel tired. I can feel anything. And I can continue to do whatever I decide to do. So this is a big thing for me. And what I hear and what you're saying is that I should just continue to be in the game, I guess, and just to practice. Practice is one of the things that I need. And the other thing I hear is that that I feel like I have is that when I move out of the way, there is I create a space for something.
I think that's I think that's true. And I think sometimes, particularly when we learn about the principles, because waking up doesn't take practice, we think piano's not supposed to take practice either. Right? My daughter last year won a dance competition. And she won first prize overall, got a scholarship, got a dance agent. And when I got the call, my first thought, literally my first thought was, who knew dancing 6 days a week, 6 hours a day for 3 years would pay off? Right? It's no different for what we want to do. It's just that sometimes we talk ourselves out of it as if we're supposed to be gifted with a natural ability. And if it takes effort, it doesn't count. Look, the effort can be effortless. You can be doing it for the love of it, like my daughter does, right? I write to write, but you know what? My writing's better a couple of million words in than was when I first started writing. Go figure.
Is there a difference in enjoyment in the beginning and now?
You know, the difference in enjoyment is much more about I just don't put so much on it as I used to. I there were times where I would really enjoy writing when I started out because it didn't matter to me. And then there was a time where it started to really matter, and that wasn't very fun. And then it stopped mattering again, and it got fun again. You know, it's funny, but one of the expressions that is kind of a throwaway line. Can we just mute Ivan for a sec because he's got background noise?
It's not from me.
Oh, is it not? Oh, it's Geek Squads. So I don't know, Geek Squad, if you can mute yourself, but you've got something going on back there. So there's an expression, and it's like I say, it's almost a joke expression about mind over matter, right? If you don't mind, it doesn't matter. Well, actually, that's kind of true. If you don't hold something in mind, if you don't continually think about something and dwell on it, it stops mattering so much.
I remember
it doesn't matter so much, you enjoy it. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I remember I'm doing some acting now, and I don't have much on my mind about acting. I don't feel like I should do this, and I don't feel like I should be really good at it because I'm an amateur. I'm not a professional actor. And I realized that I've been doing this for 6 years, and I've been doing it. It was really easy for me to do it. I never really had anything on my mind on acting, and I guess this is an example for me for something in my life that I don't have anything on, and I can see that for 6 years I got better at it, and
that's actually a beautiful example, because it's for two reasons. One, it's exactly what we're talking about, that you can get better at something just by doing it without having to have anything on it. But two, because it's what came to mind for you. So your own wisdom, as soon as you sort of opened up to it, immediately presented you with a great example. Your wisdom will be there with you every step of this journey, and it will give you what you need when you need it. And at first, for a lot of us, that takes some faith. But once you start to experience it more and more, it doesn't really take faith any more than it's an act of faith that the sun's going to come up in the morning. Like, I'm pretty sure it's going to do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ivan.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, let's see who's next up. Let's go to, is it Nikolai?
That was perfectly said. Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
Hey, Michael.
Hello, hello.
It's a real pleasure. So it was interesting, actually, the response that you gave to Ivan just now almost answered the question that I had, but I'll ask it anyway,
okay.
Which was how to kind of release thoughts that are reoccurring and can be quite stressful and draining, that can lead to sort of me feeling exhausted by them because they are almost become cyclical. But when I don't almost pay attention to them or allow them to disappear or find myself doing something else, they're not there until I recall them again, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, without particularly trying to be funny about it, why are you holding on to them in the first place? That you need to let go of them?
Yeah, I'd like to let go of them. I don't want to hold them, but they
You've got to grab something to need to let go of it, right? So I, right now, don't need to let go of my coffee cup. Okay, now I need to let go of my coffee cup. Now I don't. Now I do. For those of you listening to the audio recording, Michael is picking up his coffee cup, putting it down, and picking it up again. Do you see what I'm saying? That it's in order for letting go to feel relevant, I first have to grab on.
Okay.
Now, I'm not saying thoughts won't come to mind. They do. Mm-hmm. Right? I have an eternal example. It isn't really eternal. It just feels it sometimes I use, which is the neighbor's dog. Mm-hmm. Right? So we have a neighbor who has a dog that barks. And I didn't hear it for months, but my wife heard it. And she kept trying to get me to hear it. And once I started hearing it, I really heard it. And then I stopped hearing it again. And then she reminded me and I started hearing it again. And then I forgot it again. Because I really have no interest in having that be relevant in my world. Now, the dog, I am sure, still barks. And I'm sure because I brought it up, as it happens every time I bring it up, it's an occupational hazard of teaching, I'm going to hear it today. And it's going to bug me. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then it won't. Mm. So how is that different, if that sounds different, to what you've been trying to do with thoughts that you need to let go of?
I don't think it is.
So what do you recognize that there's all sorts of things in your life that you tune out all the time without effort?
Yeah.
Right, we're made that way, right? Our brains are awesome, right? They act like screening mechanisms. They cut out 99%, I think it's actually more, of stimulus, right? Mm-hmm. Based on theories I've read about, an autistic brain can only block out 98%. But that extra percent of stimulus that comes in is overwhelming. Right? So our healthy brains can block out 99% of stimulus. So our brain pays attention to what it thinks it needs to pay attention to and automatically screens out the rest. That's why we don't know we're thinking all the time. Because we have pretty healthy brains and most of that thinking is extraneous. But then a thought comes in and we go, ooh, that one's important, or that's real. That's, you know, that's a news report on the hurricane coming, right? And boy, are we tuned in. Well, it's really just a, I don't know if you'd call it a recognition or a re-education, that if you start to see, you really don't need to pay attention to stuff other than the stuff you need to pay attention to, which will come to you naturally, then it takes care of itself. Because the more, see, here's where my original analogy breaks down about the coffee cup, right? The more it looks, a thought looks to me like a coffee cup, like a thing that I can grab onto and put down that I have to reckon with, the more it will behave like a coffee cup, right? You've heard of the observer effect in physics, that if a physicist looks to a light as a particle, it will appear as a particle. And if it looks to it as a wave, it will appear as a wave. Well, thought works like that. When we look to thought as a thing, it appears very thingy. Mm. It becomes like an object, and we begin to relate to it like an object. But when we see thought as energy, which it also is, right? In other words, neither of them is true. I mean, energetically, I suppose, is more true at a more fundamental level. But when we see thought for the energy that it is, it behaves like energy.
Okay.
It comes and goes and changes form.
Hmm. Almost like Schrodinger's cat. Is it there or isn't it there? Okay.
And for those of you who have no idea what we're talking about, Google it. It's really interesting. All right. Thank you, Nicola.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Michael.
Pleasure.
Okay, who's that next? Let's see who's next. Let's go to Deborah Barron next. Go ahead, Deborah. You're up.
Hi, Michael.
Hello.
Let's see where to start. First of all, just thank you. I just found you a couple months ago, and you've really had an impact on me, and it was just kind of serendipity that I found you, and I just appreciate the impact on my life so far.
You're very welcome.
So I became a coach about a year ago, and I also have a full-time job. I'm the chief operating officer at a fairly large nonprofit. And I'm doing really well with working towards my goals. And I've actually gotten to the point where my employer has allowed me to coach 4 clients at a time. And I can do it through my job. And I have one on the side. And so I feel like the momentum's really good. And then there's this but. Like it also doesn't feel like quite enough yet. And when I was going through all of the obstacles, I knew that all of them touched me to some extent, but when I got to the one on money, I realized that that was a really big one. And I went through the exercise, and I sat and I wrote down all of the ways that I could think of to make money. And what my list ended up being was not really a way of making money, but people that I could network with to grow my coaching business. And ever since I walked away from the exercise, I keep building the list in my mind of more people that I could network with to build my coaching practice. And what I've realized is, I mean, I've got a really deep-seated fear in this money arena. And it's not very rational because I live a very, very comfortable life and I've got lots of savings and I've got a husband who makes a really nice living. But I also have memories of days when we really struggled. And so I have a lot of, I don't want to call it fear because I liked your description of what fear is versus worry. But so I've got worry about going back to those days. So I guess I'd like to dive in a little more deeply on your thinking around that exercise and how I might use it to my advantage.
So there's a missing piece of the puzzle for me. And I actually didn't even say that in a clever way, even though I just realized, oh, that's just, of course. But there is. There's a missing piece of the puzzle to me in what you've said, because somehow the way you're talking about this sounds problematic. But what I heard you describe was you doing an exercise, it getting your mind thinking in a healthy direction and continuing to think in a healthy, helpful direction. And so I'm wondering, what is it about this that seems problematic?
I guess I would love to just be able to let go of it. I'd like to, I know I've got...
I'm sorry. Let go of what?
Let go of my fear of not having enough money.
Oh, okay. Well, in a way, you're kind of up against what Nikolai was up against. As long as your fear of not having enough money looks like a coffee cup to you, It looks like a thing. You have no choice but to treat it like a thing. And things need to be dealt with. They need to be changed or made bigger or smaller or gotten rid of or let go of. Or, in other words, we have to thing them. Once something's gotten thingified, we kind of are stuck in the world of things. And the problem is thoughts don't work that way. Right? Things work that way. If I want to get rid of this mug, it's really easy. Right? If it wasn't still filled with coffee, I would smash it against the wall for dramatic effect right now. But it is, and I really want to drink the coffee. But my point is you can't do that with a thought because it's not really a thing. So there's something, there's a direction to look, and it's towards the nature of thought. Not the content of your thinking that you don't like, because that's way too far down the line, right? It's like somebody's got a bubble machine, and there's one particular bubble that reminds you of an ex-husband or boyfriend, and you try to get rid of that bubble. Like, no, the problem is the bubble machine. So there's something upstream from where you're looking. There's something about what is thought, not what I say thought is, not what Sid Banks says thought is, not what Louise Hay or Eckhart Tolle says thought is, but what Deborah sees for herself when she looks to the nature of thought.
I don't know if I'm getting it, but when you said that, what happened for me was I started to think about why I'm on this coaching path and the change that I want to make in the world.
Well, that to me is not neither indicative that you're getting it or not. That's like, okay, so that's something new came to mind. Cool. But that's still content.
Yeah.
So what I want to encourage you to do, and not try to make it happen in 3 minutes, right? But is look to see what you can see for yourself about the nature of thought. What is thought? And that's where you're going to find what you're looking for, because freedom is what's there before thought. Freedom of mind is what allows us to think what we think and to think things we've never thunk before. Now, that's a place that you may not have a lot of experience of looking. But the interesting thing is you'll still recognize it when you see it. We all do. We all know that place. That's where what you're looking for is.
And it's like, I feel like I'm getting so much. And when you say that, I feel like I'm just so not getting it.
Yeah. If it helps, you're going to have that experience at least 1,000 more times if you stick with this.
Okay.
Because I'm still having that experience too from time to time where I feel really smart and then like a complete newbie. Because we're exploring the mysteries of the universe here, not an electrician's manual.
Okay.
Complete for now?
Not really, but I can live with that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we got another minute and a half. Let's leave it there, Deborah. But do check back in. See where it takes you, and we'll pick up on it. Okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, guys. The Facebook group. I think most of you will find yourself already on it. If you would like to get on it, great place to share what you are taking away from today, which is very helpful to me because I read it, and that will inform what I bring to the call tomorrow. Also, don't worry at all if you didn't get on. Lynn's going to try and get as many new people on and check back in with people over the course of the week. So we're going to, as I say, get to as many of you as we can over the course of our time together. But please do make use of Facebook because it's helpful to me to be able to read what's going on with you because that's the way of making the conversation more of a dialogue. We good?
That's us. Yep. Thank you very much, guys.
Hooray.
Like Michael says, I'll try and get as many of you on over the course of the week as we can. So just raise your little hands and bear with me and we'll get there. Right. See you all tomorrow. Same time.
All right.
Same way.
Bye. Thank
you. Bye, guys. I will unmute you all for a very noisy goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
To all my news. Thanks, Michael. Thanks, newbies, you did very well. Veteran by the end of the week, won't you, Megan?
I'll ask so many questions by then, though. I won't know which one to pick.
Right, okay. I'll see you all on the call tomorrow, guys. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.